Support for The Andrew Haynes Show is brought to you by LiveSource, the premier app for auctions at live events. LiveSource is an online auction and raffle platform that allows your fans and supporters to bid and buy from their phones and computers from anywhere. LiveSource cannot be simpler or more effective, which is why more than 300 professional and collegiate sports teams and thousands of charities and athletes utilize their services to generate revenue and collect data. If you sign up with LiveSource now, you will benefit from their lowest possible pricing and they'll waive their upfront fees. You can email them at hello@livesourceapp.com. That's hello, H-E-L-L-O, at livesourceapp.com. In today's episode of The Andrew Haynes Show, we sat down with David Krakauer, the general manager of the Lafayette Aviators. David is a seasoned vet in the sports world. He started his career working in the sales departments for different teams like the Detroit Tigers, Florida Marlins, and Florida Panthers. Later, he worked for ESPN and soccer teams like the New England Revolution and Hartford Athletic, and he is now the general manager of the Lafayette Aviators, as I mentioned, and they are a part of the Prospect League. Here's a story. We hope you enjoy.
All right, we're back. Today I've got another baseball executive. It seems like I've been having a ton of baseball people lately. I've got the general manager of the Lafayette Aviators, David Krakauer. How's it going, David?
Great. Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate you having me on today.
And I got the name right?
You did. You did.
I thought for a second. I was like, I'm going to screw it up. But no, man, I'm excited to get to know you a little bit more. It looks like you have a cool background, different spots, different, you know, sports. And then you're involved with, you know, building a stadium.
Yeah.
You know, I just got done with that in Fredericksburg with the Nationals as they were launching their new stadium. So I can relate to some of the ups and downs of that process. Yeah. I'm sure. But David, what I like to do is, start off with just kind of like going through your, you know, career. Where'd you grow up and kind of how you got into sports and so on up until now?
Yeah, you know, I've been involved in sports in some capacity since I was 3 years old, 2 years old. I mean, my father put a – I would live – actually, not even my father. My grandfather put a baseball bat in my hand the day I was born. My grandfather brought a little baseball bat to the hospital for the day I was born. So I guess technically – it started when the day I was born. So I was born for baseball. I was born in New Jersey, but raised in Boca Raton, Florida, college undergraduate at the University of Missouri, and then got my master's degree in sports administration from St. Thomas University back in Miami. And really played baseball all throughout my life till I was, you know, 20 years old, and then realized, all right, you know, probably not going to play professionally, better find something to do after college that I'm not going to play baseball. So got the degree in sports administration and wound up going. My first job I got actually at the winter meetings, the baseball winter meetings in Nashville, Tennessee in December of 98. Got a job as what would now be considered an inside sales program with the Detroit Tigers. So it's funny, you mentioned me being a part of a new stadium here, and it's great, and I'm loving it. One of the things I think that attracted me to this position, and I know we'll get to this further down, but going back to the very beginning of my career, this will actually be the third stadium in my career that I've opened. And it's really cool. It's a really neat experience. Like you mentioned, and you know, with what you just went through in Fredericksburg, it's a great experience, but there are a lot of ups and downs. You know, I was part of the, going from Tiger Stadium to Comerica Park, in Detroit, then a little later on in my career in Birmingham. The transition from the Hoover Met to the new Regent Stadium in downtown Birmingham, and now in Lafayette with the opening of the new Loeb Stadium this summer. So it's been a great journey here, but really throughout my career, you know, working for the Tigers, also getting to work for the, you know, after working for the Tigers for a few years, wound up going back home to South Florida to work for the Marlins, now Miami Marlins, but they were then the Florida Marlins, and being a part of a world championship with the Marlins in 2003. I've also had stops along the way, again, as I alluded to, in Birmingham with the White Sox Double-A team in the Barons in Birmingham. No, for those who have asked, I was not there when Jordan was there. I'm not that old. But Jordan's memorabilia is still all over the stadium.
They still have Jordan jerseys for sale?
They do. You walk around and they still have the old Jordan jerseys there in the pro shop. And it's great to just, and his memorabilia is actually still all over the front offices there. They've done a really nice job in Birmingham, actually, with the team and with the stadium. But I've also spent some time, you know, as you alluded to earlier, in other sports. I've also worked in hockey in the NHL with the Florida Panthers. And then I spent some time in soccer as well, in the MLS with the New England Revolution. And then right before I got here, right before COVID hit, with Hartford Athletic in Hartford, Connecticut. And then some other stints along the way in baseball, independent league baseball in Phoenix, Arizona. And then in New Britain, Connecticut, and then a few years in Alabama with ESPN with a college bowl game in Birmingham, Alabama.
Was baseball kind of like your thing? Is that why, you know, it's predominantly baseball, or was that just the opportunities at the time?
It's always been baseball for me, and it's always been about wanting to get back into baseball. Every time I leave baseball for a quote unquote better opportunity, I spend a few years in that better opportunity, and I'm like, nope, got to get back to baseball. Baseball has been, I mean, I love all sports, and I've had success, you know, to varying degrees at all the stops along the way. But baseball is my passion. Baseball is my love. And it's where I'm most comfortable and I'm most quote unquote at home.
I kind of feel that way. Like when I leave, like, I've owned a lot of teams over the years, and it's like when I sell a team, and if I don't have a team, it's like, man, I miss not being in the sport. Like any sport, but you know, it's like I got into soccer and the other owners in the league weren't happy because I wasn't a soccer guy. You know, I was a football guy. Mm-hmm. And so, but then they realized how crazed I am as far as like competitive and like, I became a huge soccer fan because I wanted my team to win.
Exactly.
So I always, I really enjoyed baseball. That was my first stint in baseball with the Nationals. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely some aspects of it. The only thing I didn't have to do that because of COVID was I never had to learn how to do the tarp, which I hear is not like a fun thing to do. Like, and I was looking forward to it. So I asked the owner one day, I was like, do I really have to do the tarp? I'm like a vice president. And he was like, no, you don't. But then the GM was like, yeah, you do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It doesn't matter what. I mean, every stint along the way where I've been in minor league baseball, or independent league baseball, tarp, it doesn't matter whether you're the GM or, you know, an intern, you're doing tarp. Now, I will say the one beauty of the stadium we are building here, when you talk about tarp, it is all artificial turf, including what appears to be the dirt. What looks like
you dirt. You don't need tarp then, do you?
There was no tarp. We will put one over the mound and around the plate area just to make it, you know, just to, you know, but not a full on tarp. There will be no full on tarp. And so there'll be no tarp crew and no worrying about the rain and check. I mean, one of the things about working in baseball is you have the Doppler radar literally up on your computer screen every single game day. And right. It's just a nightmare because you're like, well, is that speck of green? Is that coming our way? Are we getting that rain? And should I pull the tarp now? And so we don't have to worry about that because the entire stadium is fully 100% artificial turf. So
even the mound and home plate is as well?
Our turf, yes.
It's like, it's kind of weird to see when you see it that way, but at the same time, it's like as a owner or executive, I'm thinking, okay, well, now I can use this thing for so many things and not have to worry.
Exactly.
And you know, even in Fredericksburg, we did turf, but we did dirt infield. Like,
right.
So you still have to cover that. I mean, that's the challenge. So I definitely like that. I noticed a lot of the independent teams mm-hmm. have kind of gone to that where it's all turf.
Yep.
I think that's pretty cool. So you've always kind of been into baseball. Yeah. Are you one of those, like you go out there and like take batting practice and stuff?
Oh, yeah. You get out absolutely. There? Oh, yeah. When I was out there at the stadium last week, literally for the lights came in. So we were flipping the lights on for the very first time. And when I was out there, I was talking to the director of operations for the city, and he told me that when the turf got in fully 100%, which was about a month ago, that he was out there taking fungos at shortstop. And I was like, whoa, where's my phone call? I don't pull rank as like, oh, I'm the GM of the team. I don't do that. That's not how I roll. But for something like that, yes, call me. I'm going to go. So I told him, I said, next time you take ground balls or we want to take BP or something. I said, call me. I said, I'll be the first one out there. So absolutely. Yes, I definitely am the baseball guy who will take BP when I get offered the opportunity, or go shag fly balls in center field, when I'm offered that opportunity.
I always like to try to get the staff involved in some things like that from a few times a year, where we'll go out and play a game or do something like it's such a grind, and then just go have some fun, be a little competitive, and whether it's kickball or whatever, softball.
Yes. I feel like once my staff is fully in place, I mean, right now there's only 3 full-time employees here in the office, but over the next month, we're adding 2 more full-time employees.
Nice.
and several interns. And at some point this summer, we're going to have an Aviators versus the city of Lafayette.
It's exactly what we would do.
It's really happening. Yes.
Yeah. When we had arena football, we would do our staff versus arena in a flag football game. But people would get all bloody because they'd be diving on the turf and stuff. And same thing with soccer. We did. It's fun. And the thing is, the people of the city are going to love that too. Mm-hmm. And it creates a much better relationship. Sometimes those relationships with, the team and the venue is a little rough because they just are sometimes. And so as often as you can, break bread with them, the better.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think where you're going with that is, at least from my experience, is that it's not personally. It's literally just that we have one agenda of what we're trying to accomplish, and they have a different agenda of what they're trying to accomplish, and they don't always overlap. And it's not a bad thing. They have goals and objectives they need to hit, and so do we. And sometimes they, instead of running parallel with each other, they sometimes butt heads. But I agree with you 100% that if you can take some of that tension off by doing fun things and having a softball game and then going to happy hour together to laugh about the guy who tripped over second base, it's great. And it's really good fun. And I think it does help build that camaraderie, between the team and the venue.
So tell me more about the turf. You just made me think of something. So do you put real bases out there though?
Yes. And you wouldn't notice it if you go to the city.
It's hard to tell. Yeah.
Facebook page or even our Facebook page or website, and you see the pictures. It looks like it's regular dirt. It looks like a mound. It looks like dirt at home plate. But regular bases, everything is regular. But when you step out there, you got to wear your turf. So you can't wear your cleats, because if you wear your cleats, you're going to tear an ACL. You're going to tear your Achilles. You're going to twist an ankle because the spikes are going to get caught in there, because it is straight up turf. But the bases are still bases.
Wow. So I'm looking at your Facebook page now. Mm-hmm. Your dirt is light colored.
Yes.
So right. I've seen you've seen the dark, almost like clay looking. This looks a lot more believable that it's real.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was confused because the first time I stepped on the field, because I was told when I got the job, it's going to be an all turf field. In my head, I was thinking probably what you were thinking. Oh, all turf, but the dirt's the dirt. And then I step out there and I'm like, oh no, the turf is the turf. There is no turf. And I was like, okay. But it does. It looks very real. It looks like it is actual dirt.
So tell me about some of the differences from, minor league baseball and, even pro to the summer collegiate league, because, it's a little bit different. Shorter season.
Mm-hmm. Shorter season, you don't play every team. We're working on the schedule right now, and to limit travel, for the kids, to make sure that, we're able to play the teams in our division, it is really truncated, and you're playing more localized until you get to the playoffs, and then obviously to play the divisions, but just to make the schedule as easy as possible, understanding that these kids have already played a 40, 50 plus game season, depending on what level of college ball they just played in the spring. You don't want to then make them get on a bus for 10 hours from Indiana to somewhere in Eastern Pennsylvania or something. And also the other thing about the summer collegiate leagues And as you look around the country at all the summer collegiate leagues, they're mostly regionalized. You know, yes, we now this year, because there were two expansion teams this year, so now we're up to 14 teams in the league this year. So the Prospect League now does expand all the way to West Virginia and then all the way as far west as Missouri. But like, for example, the two teams in Missouri aren't going to West Virginia. And the West Virginia team isn't going to Missouri.
How far south are you guys?
I'm trying to think of the most, the furthest team south, probably also West Virginia is probably also the furthest team south. I mean, it's mostly, the teams really are Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Western Pennsylvania, and then West Virginia now. But we'll play, now again, because of the expansion, and because West Virginia had to play somebody, we are going to actually be playing the West Virginia team this year.
What is that? Maybe like 5-6 hours from
probably about six, probably about 6 hours from that. Yeah. That side of West Virginia. And remember, we're all the way west in Indiana. We are northwest. Okay. Lafayette is I'm an hour northwest of Indianapolis, and then about an hour and a half to 2 hours southeast of Chicago. So I'm not.
So you're what? Maybe 30-40 minutes from Gary.
About 40-45 minutes from Gary, Indiana. Yeah. Gotcha. So there's some of the other differences though. Again, shorter season to your point. Yes. It's a 60
game
season, 60.
Okay.
So 30 home, 30 road, players aren't paid. It's another difference. Another
great one. No work comp, no player pay. I like it.
No player pay. You know, obviously we've got the host family, but then there are a lot of similarities. I was about to, you know, the host families, you know, and you know, we rely on host families like everybody else, and they love the kids, and it gives them somebody to root for when they go back to college. You know, as they finish their college career, and they'll be remembered. Oh my God, that guy was out here this summer, had a great year, and now look at him, you know, kicking butt at whatever college he's at. And then I'm trying to think of some of the other differences now. You know, one of the other things, it's harder to get pitchers, and you know. My manager, when I was at the University of Missouri, is now the pitching coach at Southern Illinois. And the manager from Mizzou, he developed some of the best pitchers. You know, Max Scherzer pitched for him at Mizzou, Aaron Crow, Kyle Gibson. These are great pitchers. So when I got here, the first thing I did was I gave him a call because now he's the pitching coach at Southern Illinois. But again, it's a pretty local college. And he said, and this is something, this is a major difference and something that I think a lot of summer college programs do have to deal with, is that when I called him and I said, you know, I said, Coach Jamison, I said, you know, this is my new position. Would love to talk to you and the manager at SIU about getting some pitchers here this summer. First thought was the first words out of his mouth were, that's great. I've got to figure out how many innings they're going to pitch for us first before I commit them to any summer college program. And that's something that a lot of people sort of don't really look at or pay attention to. Is the hitters want to go play because they want to get in as many reps as they can and get the at bats and get as many swings in as they can. But if a pitcher's thrown 120, 130 innings throughout the course of the spring, do they really want to throw another 50 or 60 innings over the summer and potentially blow their arm out? So recruiting pitchers for the summer college baseball leagues is a lot more challenging than recruiting a hitter. And I'll give you a perfect example. We've got 13 players under contract right now already for the summer, which is great.
All hitters.
Way ahead of, which is awesome. We've got 13 players under contract. Zero of them are pitchers.
Yeah.
They're all hitters. And because they all want to come play here and it's going to be fun. They hear new stadium. This is going to be great. This is going to be the crown jewel of the Prospect League. So they want to come play here. The hitters do. The pitchers, we'll work on.
So is that something you do as the general manager? You work on trying to build those relationships with colleges so that they'll, you know, send you potential prospects?
That is mostly done through our field manager. He handles that on his side. I will get a lot of emails from players looking for a summer place to play, and I'll look over their bio and their CV and take a look and see if there's somebody we would consider. And then I forward it on to our field manager to see if he wants to go take a look at him in the spring to see if it's somebody that he wants to bring on. But ultimately, it's his decision. He's the one who's got to put the team together on the field. It's the old Bill Parcells quote. He's the one who's got to cook the meal, so he's the one who gets to shop for the groceries. So,
I mean, it's the only way you can truly keep them accountable.
Yes.
Right? How can you – I always said, how can I fire a coach if I make him use whoever I give him. So, exactly.
Yeah.
Let them make some decisions. So that's pretty cool. What kind of, not necessarily your specific team, but like, what are like budget ranges in for collegiate teams? Because, you know, I've been at the independent pro level, but not the collegiate. And, it just seems like the business model of it makes more sense as like a potential profitable business.
Sure. And it varies. It's going to vary team by team, even league by league. I'm literally in the middle of putting ours together right now with our ownership group. And it's hard for me to say only because with the new stadium and some of the things that go with it, both from a profit and a loss standpoint, you know, yeah. As far as, you know, putting everything together, this year is going to be an outlier for us, I believe, just because of things that, you know, are transpire with the building of and moving into a new ballpark, moving offices, there's little expenses that again, you wouldn't ordinarily think about that we're going to incur this year, but we'll also get revenue this year that we probably wouldn't ordinarily get because everybody loves a new toy and a new stadium. And so our attendance figures will be up this year. Knock on wood that we're allowed to have attendance figures go up. Right. It's kind of a weird year to ask us that question. And B, I'm in the middle of doing the budget right now as we speak. So I don't even have concrete numbers for you yet.
Will you guys be, you know, hosting other events at the stadium? Like, how's your deal with the city or whoever owns the stadium? Like, are you guys kind of managing the facility?
The city owns the stadium. The way it works right now is we are a tenant. Okay. It is city run. So anything that is not Aviators related goes through the city. Okay. For example, they're already the local high school, Lafayette Jeff High School, will be playing their home games there. So when the stadium opens, we will not be the first game that gets played there. The high school will actually be the first game there. Purdue has committed to hosting some practices and scrimmages there before the Big Ten season starts. So Purdue will be doing some stuff there. And then the mayor has already talked about wanting to have other events there, whether it's a small concert. You know, we're gonna, you know, the seating capacity is about 2,500. So a small concert or potentially a low level minor league soccer team as well, like a USL2, something along those lines. But there is talk because, again, it's all turf. So we are able to have other events there. The nice thing for us as the Aviators employees is we will get to experience all that without having to run any of that, which is nice because we are literally the Lafayette Aviators, and then the city will handle everything else. Nice. I know I was talking to one of our sponsors right before Christmas, and it's the local community college here, and they're looking to have potentially because of COVID, but they're going to have a commencement in May, but they've already been told if you want to have a full commencement, it has to be outdoors. They're not going to let them use an auditorium in May. They're already talking about hosting their commencement, their May commencement at Loeb Stadium. So they're going through the city to try to book that and see how they can work that out logistically.
No, that's good. And the fact that it's turf, there's really no, like, shouldn't bother you guys any that if there is a concert, because, you know, if you have 5,000 people on the turf, it's not going to be bad.
Exactly. And not only that, but since you've worked in minor league baseball, you understand what I'm about to say, which is that it's going to allow for me to open up the creativity as far as what types of on-field cool stuff we can do without worrying about, oh my goodness, am I messing up the dirt or the grass? Or
right.
I mean, I'm going to be able to do pregame stuff without worrying about the dirt. I'll be my in-between inning promos. We get to kind of open up the creativity and pull out the best Bill Beck stuff we can ever possibly come up with. So we're excited. You know, me personally, I'm excited for that without having to worry about, you know, the cleanup and the mess from it all.
In a world where people are more aware and plugged in than ever, it's not enough to just have a great product. Consumers are looking for brands they can relate to. That's where Egghead Creative comes in. Everything they do is powered by deepening the connection with your brand. And every time you do business with them, they'll build a bespoke team of highly specialized creatives designed specifically around what you need. For more information, visit eggheadcreativestudio.com. That's E-G-G-H-E-A-D creativestudio.com. Or follow them on Instagram at Egghead Creative Studio. Now back to the show.
Yeah, I mean, because you can drive, you know, vehicles on that. You can pretty much do anything. I mean, I know there's upkeep to, you know, the turf field still, but not to the degree of, you know, natural grass.
Right.
So, you know, COVID hits, you know, obviously it's kind of put everybody upside down. And how did this position come about? You know, because you just kind of got started, you know, a few months back. So was that just a posting? Was that like through a existing relationship?
No, it was the very, very, very true cliche. If a cliche was ever true, it was when God closes a window, he opens a door. And I was working for Hartford Athletic. Everything was going great. No issues whatsoever. And we were excited. The season was starting for Hartford Athletic. And then, of course, COVID hits. First, I get furloughed. Then I get brought back. And then eventually, I get laid off, you know, as about 60% of our staff did in Hartford. And I was scouring the Teamwork Online and Indeed and everywhere there was. And then I saw the job posting. Reached out to Bill Davidson, one of the owners of the team. He flew me out here, had a great meeting with him. And I guess on the flip side, they had just gone through their own overhaul because of COVID. Either everybody that was here either left of their own volition or was also let go during COVID. And so the entire staff here is brand new. Again, you had talked to my director of ticket sales when he was at Purdue. During COVID, he's now here. He's not at Purdue anymore. He's now my director of ticket sales. And then our director of in-game presentation and digital assets, he was in Colorado working at the museum at Coors Field for the Rockies. So, you know, we've come from all over to be here. COVID sort of brought us all together. And, you know, obviously COVID's been very unfortunate for a lot of people in the sports industry. A lot of people don't understand, outside of sports, don't understand what the people who work in sports have had to go through these last 9 or 10 months. The uncertainty, the layoffs, probably more so on a per capita basis than any other industry. As far as
yeah,
not let go.
30-something percent.
Yeah, the percentage of people in sports who got furloughed or laid off due to COVID, I would put it up against any other industry other than maybe the restaurant industry. It's really unfortunate. So I want to take this time now and take about a minute or a minute and a half to thank you for what you've done. Your Free Agent Fridays for people who, you know, who are looking for work, connecting them with people who now, as we're starting to slowly come out of COVID in this industry, and so the employers who are looking to hire and the people who've been out of work for several months, you know, what you're doing is it's amazing work, because there are so many people that are out of work right now that are just trying to feed their families and trying to just make it to the next paycheck or the next whatever on the next unemployment check or whatever they're grabbing every couple of weeks. So, you know, so on behalf of everybody out there, you know, thank you for what you're doing for this industry right now, Andrew.
No, I appreciate it. You know, and it's funny how those things just, you know, even come about. You know, I think, you know, I started the podcast, I was working with the Fred Nats up there, mm-hmm. you know, going through COVID, I was like, what can I do just to kind of, you know, not be bored. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously we were still selling. We did really well even during COVID, but I was like, let me push myself. So I started the podcast, and then one day I was just driving and I was like, I see all these people on LinkedIn that have lost their jobs. And I'm like, gosh, it's like every day I see somebody new. And I'm like, there's gotta be a way I can help. And so that's how I just, it started. And I was like, I put it out there. I was like, every Friday, I'll do a free agent Friday. I was going to do one free agent each Friday. And then my email box blew up. You know, I've done over 100 of them, you know, in probably like 5 months. Cause I really haven't done any the last 2 months cause the emails dropped off. And so, you know, obviously I'll still do it, but then a week ago I post again, just like, hey, if you're looking for something in sports or entertainment, post in the comments what you're looking for. And, I guess it's gone viral. It's like 400,000 views, you know, 2000 something comments. But what's really cool about that is if you go on that thread and look, there's people that have connected with each other, like employers and potential candidates. And so it's been really cool to see that. I've gotten a lot of emails just on resumes. So not that I'm an HR person. I'm not a podcast person either, but I'm doing it right. The one thing I've learned as I'm getting older is there's a lot of, you know, gratification in helping people. Like I love to be a connector, and whether that's for jobs, whether that's partnerships, just anything, I like to connect people. And so now I'm trying to brainstorm on the best way to help as many of those people as possible. Cause there's just too many that I can't do it. And there's probably not jobs for everyone. You know, some of them don't have the necessary experience or just, you know, whatever. But, you know, as you are starting to look, I definitely, please shoot me over any job postings that you have so I could post it as well and try to send some qualified people your way. But
absolutely,
that's the cool thing about our business is people are willing to help.
And, yeah.
You know, just that one post and how many people have shared it, how many people have, you know, said, hey, I've got emails. Hey, I've got these three jobs open right now. And I'll post it. I mean, I've just in the last week too, but you know, I'm like, I got like 4,000 connection requests. Mm-hmm. Like it's been crazy just from that post. So it's amazing what a little simple gesture can do. And, you know, it's been rewarding to see, like, you know, Xander and some of those other people that are getting opportunities. Some are because of the show and some are just, they're not, but you know, it's just cool to see people getting back to work and hopefully we can come out of this thing stronger and smarter. I think too, I think some teams may have been overstaffed.
Yeah.
This is an opportunity to kind of reset and let's make sure that we're operating as efficiently as possible.
Exactly. It's funny because you mentioned the budget. That's one of the things that ownership and I are looking at is, okay, this was the budget pre-COVID. We've had a chance to kind of reset things here now. And is there a way that we can maybe, you know, do things more efficiently and still hire people and still do what we need to do, but save a little bit of money by not overstaffing things and staffing properly, I guess is probably the way to say it. So you're 100% right on. And again, I think, look, COVID has been 99% of what COVID has been negative. There's been so much negative. But the 1% of the positive is that, you know, people found a better, more efficient way to do different things in their life. And that is that, you know, you said you started the podcast. You know, I wrote a book. You know, everybody found different ways to do different things in their life that we probably wouldn't have done had COVID not hit. We probably would have just continued to gone along our lives, you know, tweedledee, just kind of ho-hum, just living our life the way it is. And COVID made everybody reevaluate everything in their life. Okay, what's important? What's bogging me down for no apparent reason? And you just get that out of your life. And I think business owners have been forced to do the same thing, is that, okay, we've been running a business, or in our case, you know, a sports team, you know, X way, maybe we need to take this time to reevaluate how we're doing it so that when we come out of this on the back end, we're doing things better moving forward. So I think again, if there's one positive to take out of COVID, it's that we all got to reevaluate things in our life and only keep the things in our life or in our business that are important.
Well, and I think too, something to think about And I've done a few like live demos on LinkedIn of some different vendors, like Spinzo. I don't know if you use Spinzo, but you know, that platform is a great way to be as efficient as possible and, you know, reach as many people as possible. You know, it's more on the group ticket side of things. You know, and I think kind of getting creative and looking at the tech options, because there's so many, you know, things that can help. I mean, hell, I never hosted a Zoom call before COVID. I've been on a Zoom call, but I never hosted one.
Yeah.
I might have a record with Zoom on the most Zoom call meetings.
Yeah.
But again, it's people are getting comfortable with it. So it's like, yeah. As a salesperson, you know, somebody that's, you know, wearing many hats in minor league sports, my time is very valuable. And so if I have to drive 30 minutes one way, 30 minutes another, just for a face-to-face, obviously, you know, some of them are worth it, but now it's not frowned upon, I don't think, to say, hey, you want to do a Zoom call? And, you know, obviously if it's a big partnership or something, you're going to, you know, eventually do a face-to-face, but I think that it's made me more efficient just in everything that I do. And that's important. So, I'm excited, and you're starting to see some teams. Like I said, there's like this opportunity for you, you know, popped up. And you know, teams are shuffling, and then all the things going on with minor league baseball and major league baseball, you know, on top of COVID, you know, it's like, can we wait another year for something like that? Yeah. But it's pretty cool to see. And I've been following, you know, the progress there at the stadium, because it just looks cool, man, and it's fun. So how you got there in September, October. So I don't even know when you got there, but like, what do you do? You're in the middle of COVID. So like, how do you introduce yourself to the community?
There's not a community event. I have to say, I'm going to give the city of Lafayette, even the city of West, I moved, even though the stadium's in Lafayette, the offices are in Lafayette. My family and I moved to West Lafayette, right by Purdue, right by the campus. You know, our house is over on that side. But the people of Lafayette and West Lafayette, I actually have jokingly nicknamed it Canada South. They are the nicest people in the world. They have been so welcoming to me, my family, whether I'm calling about a business matter or something personal, getting introduced to people in the community. The people I've met here have been salt of the earth, just so nice. I can't possibly stress this enough. If anybody here listens to this podcast who is in Lafayette or West Lafayette, kudos to you guys. You guys are awesome. Seriously. But so how I've introduced myself really is I picked up the phone and people are literally willing to talk to me right now. And it's amazing is that everywhere else you hear about these horror stories about trying to make sales during COVID and, you know, getting hung up on because people are thinking you're rude to act, you know, how dare you have the audacity to ask me for money in the middle of COVID. But people here are willing to talk. And I think part of it is they're to everybody. And I hope that this message gets through to everybody around the country right now, which is that everybody is desperate for some sort of live entertainment. And absolutely, if you can provide them with affordable, fun, good entertainment, they're going to come back. They're going to want to come back. They're going to want to engage you. And really, that's what we're offering is, you know, Purdue really does command the attention of this community from September through May, whether it's Purdue football, really Purdue basketball, as I've learned very quickly, Purdue basketball is on a pedestal here. Everybody loves Purdue basketball, which is great. It's perfectly fine. Purdue baseball, just Purdue in general is the end all be all in this area. But guess what? Purdue doesn't do anything over the summer. There is no Purdue summer sports. So we can be, and we are going to be, the summer destination. And that is how we've positioned it, because it's the truth. There's going to be a brand new stadium, a brand new baseball stadium here this summer with a baseball team that everybody's dying to see, that everybody just wants to get out and have some fun, grab a beer, grab a hot dog, take the kids, go and enjoy a Saturday night at the ballpark, and you know, for a very inexpensive price. And so when I picked up the phone and called people, they've been receptive. Even if they're not ready to, to jump on board and buy anything just yet. They're willing to have the conversation. Nobody's hanging up on me. Nobody's being rude to me. Nobody's, you know, calling me names. Everybody is at least getting on the phone and saying, you know what, this sounds like a great opportunity. This is going to be fun. Everybody wants to be there. Everybody wants to see the new stadium. I mean, I wasn't here, to your point. I just got here in October. So I wasn't here when the old Loeb Stadium was here. On my desk here in my office, I've got, I was left with a really neat little statue of the old stadium. So I've got a little picture, a little thing of the old stadium on my desk. But I didn't get to experience how bad apparently it was and how run down it was. So everybody's excited. So for me, it's been easy for me to get on the phone and talk to people and get people at least engaged and interested in what we're doing, whether it's from a sponsorship side and selling all the sponsorships inside the stadium, or working on ticket sales from season ticket packages to even discussing some of the group outings and some of the new group hospitality areas we're going to have at the new stadium. And then again, to even just getting engaged with the Lafayette Chamber and the tourism department, and everybody just seems to want to help. And that's been, it's been a blessing to me from a, you know, getting acclimated to a new, you know, a new area. I didn't know anybody here. I'd never been, other than into Indianapolis from time to time. I'd never been to Indiana. I'd never been to Lafayette or West Lafayette, Indiana in my life. My family had never been here. So we didn't know a soul in the community. So it wasn't as though we got taken in by people who knew us.
Right.
These are people, these are complete strangers. We're like, no, let me help you. And it's so again, kudos to the greater Lafayette community and West Lafayette community for taking us in and making my transition and my family's transition as easy as possible. And again, the excitement that is building around Aviators baseball for this summer is, you know, kind of, it's coming to a crest, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. And I think we had that similar stuff in Virginia. And what I always said is, look, people are willing to spend money. Okay. Now there's going to be some that aren't, and that's part of you doing your job and identifying that in the conversation pretty quickly. And, you know, some people you might have to say, hey, I'll call, you know, can I call you in a month or two? But we kept selling, kept selling them throughout COVID and had big numbers. So I know the excitement when there's a new stadium. I also like, you know, and you kind of hit on it, is like, it, you know, I'm getting older, so I hate moving as much as I used to. But what I do enjoy is I love going to that new market, not knowing anyone, and just like getting totally entrenched in it and just totally like, you know, I don't know. There's something, there's, it's like an adrenaline for me, like, because I have to hustle. I've got to do everything to, you know, build those relationships, and you have to build them pretty quickly. There's not a lot of time to, like, you know, so it's building rapport quickly. It's, you know, what, two or three of you guys now. So it's wearing every hat there is, dealing with COVID, probably dealing with the city on, you know, the stadium. So never ends.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It's been, and it is, you're 100% right. It's been exciting. I haven't had time to stress because there is no runway. The runway, we're on the runway right now. But it is, you feel like there, when you get here, you're like, oh, it's October 20th. My birthday was October 20th. And the season doesn't start till probably the week after Memorial Day. So gosh, I've got all the time in the world. But when you really stop to think about all the things you need to accomplish between October 20th and let's just say June 1st, when you actually write it all down, you're like, I don't have a runway. I've just got to just go. And so it's been exciting.
On the stadium, what's the cost on building that? The city's doing it. What kind of size is that?
We have been told that the total cost was $20.3 million.
Wow. Now, will you guys, it looks like there's like nice hospitality areas and stuff. Are your offices going to be at the stadium?
Yes. I've been told by the director of operations again for the city when I met with him last week that we are still currently on schedule to move in to our offices the first week of February. Again, that will depend on how the weather is over the next 6 weeks, or I guess now we're 3 weeks away, about the next few weeks. And what kind of progress we're able to make, because when I was at the stadium last week, it still looked like, aesthetically it looks great, but infrastructure wise, there's still
right.
good to do. But he said we're still on schedule for early February. Look, we don't play games there till May. If I'm in there by March and I can have my ticket sales people showing seats from March to May, from the season tickets, from the hospitality areas, and actually taking people around the ballpark for 2 months, as long as for me, as long as I'm in by March, that would be a win in my book.
I don't know if you guys can do this, but we started. This was my part of my Zoom, you know, experiences. We started doing live Zoom tours of the stadium. So I would have our sales team go out and we would, you know, it would be me and the sales rep. And then a couple of them, we did the whole sales team where we'd go at different parts of the stadium. And it was really cool. We ended up selling a decent amount of tickets from it. And it got the fans excited.
Yeah.
Because they weren't able to come out to the stadium at that point.
That's cool.
So it's just kind of something different, but
that's innovative. That's really neat. That's a great way to take a negative and turn it into a positive. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And we did a live Q&A so people could, you know, chime in, and we recorded them so that we had them if people couldn't make them. But it was basically, you know, the sales reps would first focus on their existing customers. So anybody who was a customer got a tour first. Then we started doing prospect tours and, you know, you want to show off the stadium. And, you know, then we started getting into LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And LinkedIn is like I preach LinkedIn left and right. I mean, LinkedIn is such a great tool if used properly. And, you know, it definitely helped us up there, brought us some partnerships. And from there. So as GM of a summer collegiate team, are you kind of like expected to be kind of the top revenue producer as well, like on the partnership side and all that?
Yes. Yeah. My revenue goals are obviously the most aggressive for the team. But again, one of my mentors, you may know the family, or at least the name of the family, the Yormarks, Brett and Michael Yormark. I worked for Michael Yormark with the Florida Panthers, and he didn't care what your title was. You were a sales rep. He was the president of the team at the time. He was the top. He was the president of an NHL hockey team. He was the top revenue producer for the team. I ran the ad sales department. I had to be, as manager of the ad sales, I better have brought in the most advertising dollars I better have outsold every one of my reps. And that's just how he was. And he didn't care if you were, if your title was community relations. At some point, you were going out and selling.
Right.
And that's sort of how... I guess that's sort of how I learned, is that it doesn't matter what your title is, you have to bring in revenue for the team. So yes, so it's tied. It's top down for us. You know, I better be the top revenue guy. My director of ticket sales better be the top ticket sales guy, you know, and so on and so on, you know. So that, you know, because it is one of the things I learned very early on, is it's very hard to tell someone to do something you're not willing to do yourself. If you want to be a good leader, I better not tell everybody to go out and sell while I'm sitting in my office looking at player stats.
Yeah.
I better be out there selling so I can say, look, if I can do it, then you better be able to do it. So that was one of the things about a leader, is that you better do it yourself if you're going to tell somebody else to do it or expect somebody else to do it.
And I love leadership roles that are also revenue producing. You know, some of these major league teams or some of these other teams, they turn into just leadership. I definitely love the grind of going out there, but I want to find out about your book. So tell me about this book, because I started a crazy podcast. I'm a professional now because I have gotten some sponsors. So I've been paid. Nice. So tell me about this book.
So I guess technically that makes me a professional author, because it was published and paid by Amazon.
Look at us. We are just talented.
So what happened was, again, COVID hits. I wind up getting laid off. I don't know what, I'm looking for jobs, but I need to find another way to, I've got a family. So in 2009, I was hospitalized right before Christmas, 2 days before Christmas. I've had asthma since I'm 3 years old. And so Christmas of 2009, I wound up in the hospital. I've been hospitalized several times, but this was by far the worst of my life. I'm 35 years old, laying in a hospital bed, not getting to celebrate Christmas with my family. I'm in the CICU for 4 days, breathing tubes up my nose. My brother, fortunately, because my brother is such a loving, loving younger brother, documented this with pictures, which actually wound up benefiting. At the time, I hated him for it. It turned out that the picture turned out to be the motivation for everything that happened in the next 11 years. So I get out of the hospital 4 days later, after spending 4 days in CICU, and I, with a new diagnosis, instead of asthma now, I've been told I have COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And I had been told at the time that I was the youngest non-smoker to have ever been diagnosed with that. That this is a diagnosis that usually 80-year-old smokers get, or just people who've been smoking their entire life get. Because again, my lungs had deteriorated that bad. And I was determined that this was not gonna, basically alter my life. If anything, I was going to overcome this in the best possible way. And eventually I used fitness and nutrition to really start to expand my lungs, open my lungs, and breathe better, in addition to all the advances in science and technology and medicine that allowed me to get properly medicated and really just allow me to live a better life. But through my love of fitness, I began to become a competitive bodybuilder. And so in 2017, I actually began competitive bodybuilding. And then in 2019, I actually won my division and became a professional bodybuilder. And nice. So then when COVID hit, I decided, you know what? I am going to detail my journey from laying in a hospital bed to becoming a professional bodybuilder. And so I wrote a book, and it got published and on Amazon, and that kind of just sort of happened when I had nothing else to do, sitting at home looking for a job.
When you got sick and hospitalized back then, were you overweight at the time? Or
no, I was even skinnier than I was now. Now at least I have muscle. But I was, I mean, all my life I was the short, skinny one. For reference, as a freshman in high school, I was 4'7" and weighed 71 pounds. Wow. I graduated high school at about 110. I hit a growth spurt. I went all the way from 4'7" to 5'7". Huge growth. And then, so I graduated high school at about 110 pounds. So I've always been underweight. And so I just, when I got out of the hospital, I said, you know what? I'm going to join it. I'd already had a gym membership, but I used it maybe three, four times a week, kind of here and there. Didn't do a lot in the gym. And I just changed my lifestyle when I got out of the hospital. I said, no, fitness is going to become just what gets me to the next level. Not just physically, obviously, but for my lungs, for my health. And it did.
Was that just like a switch, or yeah, did that take time?
No, and my wife will confirm this. The day I got out of the hospital, she asked what I was going to do. We get home from the hospital. She's driving me home. We get home to our house. We were living in Florida at the time. And I got changed out of whatever I'd worn in the hospital into gym clothes. And she says, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to the gym. She goes, what do you mean you're going to the gym? She goes, you literally got out of the hospital 20 minutes ago. I said, I'm changing my life. I said, I'm not. I said, this isn't happening ever again. I had at the time, my son was 5 years old. And I said, no, I said, my son is going to get to grow up with a father. I said, the way my son's going to get to grow up with a father is I'm going to go to the gym and I'm changing my life. Period. End of story. And that's sort of how it was born.
Man, that's awesome. That is awesome. I need to, I don't want something bad to happen to me that I have that switch. I need to get it, but I like to eat and man, I've been getting it's hard to exercise. Like I need to play in like some sort of league or something. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I need something to kind of get me over that hump, but that's great. What's the book called? How can people find it?
Sure. It's on Amazon.com. And the title of the book is Thriving After Diagnosis, How a Pro Bodybuilder Began His Journey from the ICU.
Do you still compete in competitions for bodybuilding?
I do. I became a professional in 2019. My pro debut was supposed to be in 2020, COVID. So my pro debut will actually be in 2021. It appears the show I'm going to be doing will be in November. I am potentially looking at a show earlier, though, in September, October, but I know for a fact I'll be competing in November. And if I don't compete in the September, October show, then November will be my pro debut.
Wow. Well, good luck with that, man. I'm going to have to check the book out and get motivated and, you know, get back into the gym. It's like I used to be so hardcore with it when I played football. Right. But when I stopped playing, it's been tough. But I'm going to get back. I'm going to get back. I'm at about 232, 233 right now. But I'm, you know, I'm 5'11". So I'd like to get down to about 200 for me. I would be, you know, a little bit better. Sure. I've been eating a little bit better, trying. That's the hardest part.
And people do not understand. I'm glad you get working out is actually the easy part. Me getting up at 4:30 in the morning and going to the gym is actually easy. Like that is the easy part for me. It is making sure that I eat what I'm supposed to eat during the day. That's the hard part is not sitting on the couch watching a TV or watching a football game, you know, and pulling up the potato chips. Like that's the hard part.
It's a couple things. My daughter bought us a air fryer for our housewarming gift. And so I like chicken wings. Like I like fried food. So I found that this air fryer is like the best thing I've ever had because now I can have crispy wings without, you know, I don't put any oil in ours. I know they say some to put like a tablespoon or what. I don't put any in. But man, it cooks the food so good.
Oh yeah. The air fryer.
So like the other day I was watching, flipping through TV and I come across Home Shopping Network and they had air fryers on there. This is how you know you're getting old. Okay. Like I got excited because it had different trays and all, like it was better than the one I had. So I take a picture of my daughter. She's 23, lives in Tampa. I sent it to her. I said, this is what your dad does now. He watches Home Shopping Network.
It is literally crazy what excites us now as opposed to when we were in our 20s is that, like you said, air fryers. The coolest purchases I've made in the last 12 months is an air fryer, a food scale, and a meat thermometer. And I'm like, these are the coolest things ever. Most people would be like, what are you doing? I'm like, this is awesome. I'm like, no, I love my air fryer. I love my meat thermometer. And I love my food scale. These are the things, these are the essentials for me now.
I always liked the movie Old School, I think it was, where Will Ferrell's like, you know, I don't know, maybe Bed Bath & Beyond I'll go to. So it's like, it was really funny, but it's like, damn, that's me now. Like, yeah. I love, like, when we first moved into our house, we went to Bed Bath & Beyond, and it's like, damn, we just dropped like $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
But we were so excited, so.
Oh, my wife was so pumped. We moved a lot, you know, we moved from Connecticut, okay, to Lafayette. Or West Lafayette, excuse me. The cost of living here compared to Connecticut it's ridiculous. Okay, it's ridiculous. We are paying less money for the house we live in now than we did in Connecticut, and we literally have twice the house. We went from 1,900 square feet to 4,300 square feet, and we're paying less. Okay, because Indiana. This is the hidden gem of the world, I think.
Yeah.
The nice people, the cost of living. So my wife took that as, oh, we're gonna go get thousands of dollars worth of furniture, and it's to her it was like the coolest thing ever is that she got to spend all this money on brand new furniture for, you know, a new house. I was like, oh, that's awesome, that's great.
That is cool. Tell Bill I said hi too. I met Bill when he was involved with, I don't know if he still is, with the ECHL team in Atlanta. So
I will let him know. I'll see him, and he will be back in town in 2 weeks. So I will.
Good dude, man. I really liked him. So
he's great.
But hey, it sounds like you got an awesome thing going there. Let's keep in touch. Anything I can do to help, man? When you do need intern staff, please take a look at that stuff. Let's try to help as many out as we can. I know there's some people in your area too. So
I definitely will. As any openings, I will shoot them to you on LinkedIn, and feel free to pass that along. Obviously, anything we can do to help people right now, I'm all for.
Hey, podcast fans. Thanks for listening to today's episode of The Andrew Haynes Show. If you enjoyed it, be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you have any questions, be sure to reach out to Andrew on LinkedIn. We'll see you next time.